Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's For Women. You are not 9 to 5 and neither are we. Conveniently open online 365 days per year, 24 hours per day.
Name Smurfit. It conjures up various images for us. Heritage fortunes, Irish business legend, cardboard and rich lists. Many of you may have seen the documentary, a fascinating documentary on the life of Michael Smurfit recently and his family. And this morning we're going to meet someone from the inner circle of that dynasty, his daughter, Sharon Smurfit. She's a mother of two grown-up boys and is self-employed in the golf industry. Sharon, good morning to you.
Good morning, Oliver.
Where in the Smurfit family tree do you come? Are you a middle child or...?
I am the third child.
Third.
So two older brothers and a younger sister.
Is that worse than the Prince Harry position then down the pecking order a bit?
I think I get away with everything as the third child.
Right. you're the daddy's girl sort of?
No, you just get to do... The oldest and the youngest are the most, you know, folk are looked after.
They're the golden children.
The golden children.
Where was home growing up?
Stirlorgan.
Stirlorgan, all your life?
All my life, yeah.
So. And I believe you still live around that environs.
I actually live near here, actually. I've never, this for my first time in RT in right. all the years that I've lived locally. So.
I would consider this more or less, you know, very much the same hinterland. So, yeah, and that's... That's the kind of preserve of posh children, really, isn't it? They rarely leave where they grow up.
Well, I don't know. Look, you know, Dublin is Dublin. Anywhere you live in Dublin is great. That's the way I look at it.
Okay. So. You love it. You love the place. Do you realise, or does a child realise when they're growing up in a very storied family mm-hmm. and your granddad is the Jefferson Smurfit, who mm-hmm. I saw in the documentary, he's like a kind of a Dickensian version of Robert Maxwell. Looks utterly terrifying. are you aware as a child that your life is very different to almost everybody else in the country?
No, not at all, actually, funny enough. I always remember Grandad arriving with a bar of Dairy Milk chocolate every Sunday. That's how my memories of him. Obviously, he died when I was very young.
Yeah.
And my Nana was living in Fox Rock or down near Fox Rock Church. And Dad, he was around and we cycled to school and we did normal things and, you know, hung out with our friends. Didn't feel any different to anybody else at the time.
And is anybody else, because maybe you go to schools where everybody is from dynasty families and...
Yeah, I went to Mount Anville, loved it, absolutely loved it. Not sure Mount Anville loved me. I wasn't the best student in the world, but I absolutely loved it. I loved the sports, I loved the hockey, I loved my friends, I loved the teachers, but... I think I certainly gave them some heartache, certainly to Deirdre Doyle at the time. It certainly gave heartache, but enjoyed
Deirdre
it.
Doyle a teacher?
She was the headmistress at the time.
She was the headmistress, okay. Yeah. Now, that is a fancy school, isn't it? Would friends have been sort of awed by, oh, we're going to get to go over to the Smurfit house?
Well, all my friends went to the same school. So I'm still friends with the same girls that I went to in junior infants. So we grew up together, so they know me well. So.
By the way, that's also a hallmark, I know, Russell Carroll Kelly, of the posh people of
Absolutely.
Dublin.
Absolutely, yeah.
But you're still hanging out with your national school friends.
Yeah, well, it wasn't national school in those
secondary
days.
School,
it was the
okay.
second. It was the Mount Anville has the Montessori school. Yeah.
And that's a girl. That was an all-girls
school.
And they inevitably end up marrying the boys from the old boy, the other part of school. That's our outside
yeah.
view of it anyway. Dad is Michael Smurfit, formidable figure. Do you see a lot of Dad growing up?
Yeah, I saw a good bit of him, actually. I mean, mostly around holiday time. I think, obviously, I certainly learned a few things myself from the documentary.
Did you?
Yeah, because, you know, there was, you know, I suppose I didn't realise how hard he worked at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was nice to sort of see him in action, you know, because he would have been travelling an awful lot. But he always seemed to come home at the appropriate time of school reports and was always there for... we always went on holidays together. So we always had Christmas together. We always had our summer holidays together. So I suppose it felt, you know, normal. I don't know.
The school reports. So that sounds like he came home specially to see how you're getting along.
Always seemed to be the case.
Really?
Yeah.
What was that day like when the school reports arrived?
Pretty terrifying, especially not the most studious person in the world, but was always able to work my way around it somehow.
Would he be disappointed if it wasn't good?
No, I think he would just keep saying, try harder, try harder.
Okay.
better luck next time.
you got away with it.
I got away with it. I think I got away with it more so than the boys.
Okay. And as you say, the oldest and youngest.
Yeah.
But he kept a watchful eye on education and...
Yeah, no, he was good. He always knew what we were up to and stuff like that. So it wasn't too bad. But it was nice. We had a lot of freedom, obviously, because he wasn't there a lot of the time.
Okay, when he's travelling, as we saw in the documentary.
Yeah.
He says quite matter-of-factly, doesn't it? He's not there. This is the sacrifice for success.
It is a sacrifice for success. And I'm sure a lot of people out there are working very hard and, you know, are working in their businesses that are, you know, losing out on seeing their children every single day or whatever. But that's just the way of life, unfortunately.
He doesn't say it in a regretful way that he wishes he was at home more.
No. I would totally agree with that. I couldn't see him as the stay-at-home dad now, for sure. He was definitely very driven, very, very focused, and still is, even at his age now.
Yeah, remarkably, is he 88?
88, he is, yeah. Just visited him there, came home last night, so he's in great form.
Fantastic.
In Monaco, yeah.
On the Lady Anne McGee, which is named after his mum.
Named after his mum, yeah.
There was something so Citizen Kane about seeing him sitting in this lovely timber boat with the portrait of his mother looking down.
Yeah, I mean, he had a great passion for his mum and dad, you know. And, you know, I think he was thrown into work at a very young age. So, you know, so
what attracts a multi-millionaire to the tax haven of Monte Carlo?
I wonder.
Your mum, Norma Smurfit, I was interested that only archive appears of her in that documentary. She's very low-key.
Mum's very private. She would have been much more public in the day. She would have done a lot of work for charity. She would have been a philanthropist of helping so many different people all over the country. And that's what she put her time into in her, you know.
She's an extraordinary figure in charity.
Extraordinary. I mean, incredible energy. I mean, she's mid-80s now and she's incredible. I mean, you know, we're very lucky to have both our parents still here, you know.
Was she somebody who kept tabs on your exam procedures? I don't want to focus on this too much, but I am interested when, you know, there is a billionaire and someone who's around the place and mum's at home having to do all of the child rearing and looking and minding you.
Well, mum's from England, so she kept us very grounded. All of us were very grounded. If you wanted to go out at the weekend when you sort of became 17, 18, you needed to earn the money. You didn't. There was no handouts and those, you know, you got a bit of pocket money, but that was for school and you used it wisely. But no, don't remember being handed out wads of cash to go to school or go out at the weekends or anything like that. And some weekends you didn't go out at all. And if you were sick on a Thursday and you didn't go to school on Friday, you didn't go out the weekend at all.
You had to earn it. And they weren't handout parents throughout your life.
No, never. I've never. I mean, certainly in times of, you know, there has been times, obviously, they've helped out for sure, you know, and with advice and helping out maybe, you know, with a bit of business advice and also financially and a bit of business and stuff like that. But no, I mean, I've failed miserably in some businesses that I've done.
Really?
And hopefully this one will be a little bit more successful.
That must be difficult to do when you're in a family that it was so successful. In two generations in your life.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, the name is obviously, it's a very proud name to carry, but it can also be a very daunting name to carry. And, you know, the expectation of you is a lot higher, I think, in my view. But that's, other people might say differently.
How do you feel that?
It's, you know, sometimes, you know, I feel sometimes like, you know, I wouldn't go for that job interview because people would say, why do you need to work? I mean, for the amount of times I used to hear that, why do you need to work?
Yeah.
I mean, I've always worked. Since the day I left school, I didn't go to college. I went straight to Australia. I worked there for 6 months. I came home. I went work in Smurfit's. Went out. I went to England. So I've always worked, you know. So
you need to work.
I need to work, yeah. I mean, for mentally as well as anything else, you have to get out and do stuff, you know. And I think I have my mum's, you know, I like helping people. I like you know, doing stuff for other people as well. So I should have been a nurse. My husband says I should have been a nurse.
Oh, right. Is it too late?
It's way too late for
that.
Yeah.
That's wrong with you. That sounds like
it's way too late.
you seem like a spring chicken still. I suppose when people say you mustn't need to work, it's like even if you're working and they're not handout type parents, there is the feeling that the rest of us don't have, which is like, if you're on your uppers, you will probably be bailed out.
You know what? There's a possibility. I don't know. I haven't. I've never felt the need to ask because, you know, you can. I always say you can sleep in one bed. You can, you know, you have you, once you can have a nice few holidays a year, play a good bit of round of golf, join a golf club, stuff like that. In my world, you know, what else do you need if you can buy a few things?
Basics.
Yeah, well, the basics, obviously.
That sounds like a lavish lifestyle to most people.
Really? I think a lot of people go on holidays. I think everybody takes at least two holidays a year.
Certainly not the majority of the country, I would say.
Yeah, no, that's
with the golf and everything like that. Because golf is seen as it was once seen as an elite sport. There are certainly parts of it, but it's quite a broad sport now in Ireland in particular, isn't it?
100%. And, you know, Golf Ireland are doing great things at the moment. They're putting on lots of different, you know, to get more people involved. And there are many ways to get more people involved. So hopefully, you know, it is a sport for everyone. Like, you know, I can't play rugby, not many people can, but everybody, I think golf is a great game for all ages. And no matter what age you are, you can start golf.
You started a little later, I think, did you? You didn't play golf all your life?
No, I started in London very, very briefly in a public golf course with some friends of mine, because there were no mobile phones in those days. So if I didn't play golf with them, I didn't know where they were going that evening. Okay. And then really only started competitively in my early 30s.
Oh, competitively?
Mm.
And are you playing competitively still, as in?
Well, competitively, I mean in competitions club. Within
yeah.
the club, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So you love it?
Absolutely love it, yeah. So I started then working in the K Club, and I suppose that's where one of the sort of handouts that you say, you know, that you could possibly get from your family
yeah.
is that, you know, I was looking for work and what to do with myself. And that's when Dad said, well, look, would you go into the K Club and work in the golf side?
And the K Club was essentially one of his retirement projects, even though it became a huge success.
Well, it was owned by the Smurfit Group originally, and then he bought it, and then himself outright. And fantastic venue. Like, you know, I mean, it was his pet project. It was his place. And
did you have to ask him for the job? How does that work?
No, I think he sort of said, you know, what do you want? Like, what do you know? And I said golf. And he said, well, then let's get you into the golf side of stuff in the K Club. But so that's what I did. I went down.
Did you have to do a lot of work in that job?
Oh, yeah. I was started off as director of membership, and then I went into director of golf. And then from there, I studied actually to become a golf professional, not as in golf, in the golf industry, through the Club Managers Association of Europe. And I got my diploma, and you can go on further to get your CCM if you want. And so that was the first time I actually did some proper education after school.
Yeah. And then it was sold.
And then it sold, and then COVID hit, and, you know, like a lot of people, at home for a while, worked in the vaccination centre with some.
Did you?
I did. I worked helping the volunteers. I went online, looked for something to do. And
Was it a job or was it a voluntary?
No, voluntary.
Oh, okay.
Through Volunteer Ireland. Yeah.
Where did you do that?
Hmm?
Where did you do it?
In the Aviva.
Oh, in the Aviva Stadium.
Yeah, so it was great fun because. Well, I say great fun. It was obviously not, you know, it was the camaraderie of people coming in. It was lovely to see people because a lot of people hadn't obviously seen people for a long time. So I made some great friends there. And
you really do want to be a nurse.
I really did want to be a nurse.
You really did. Someone's having to go easy. The chip is getting a bit obvious. The girl had no influence on where she happened to be born into, says Claire.
So, say that again?
Apparently, it's a text saying that I sound like I have a chip on my shoulder because I'm questioning. But I think it's fascinating to hear from someone from inside a privileged family.
Yeah.
And we're just getting your story.
So now
you went back to golf after.
Yeah. So basically what I decided, like, again, back helping people, I wanted to find an area that I could help Irish golf clubs. And especially the smaller golf clubs. We have some amazing golf clubs in Ireland. And, you know, a lot of the big clubs are well sold out already for 2025.
Yes,
and with American visitors, which we all rely on very heavily, our tourism. And so I just decided to set up a website to originally to start the golf industry. So one section has golf industry tips and things like that. And then the other side I started to do about golf for the golfer. Mm-hmm. And on there, there's, you know, anything. I do most of my work from 6 to 10 p.m. at night. So, or even as my husband say, I think it's later than 10, but I trail through the internet. I find what they're publishing, what they're posting, and I take it down and I put it onto my website. So if they're advertising an open day or, you know, a membership or anything like that. So, and then I set up a community page on Facebook and started doing e-zines. And so it's sort of just taken off from there, you know, and helping golf clubs.
And it's clubs that need a bit of a leg up.
Yeah, I mean, just to promote them, you know. I mean, a lot of clubs. And try and encourage them and show them how to use the social media and get involved in promoting their own club, you know.
This sounds like clubs mostly outside of Dublin or around the place that are maybe not in such tourist hubs, is that there?
Yeah, I mean, every club does a lot of open days, you know. So, you know, there might be a €25 green fee or a €20, even 30. Okay, that makes a difference for people to go to them. So I encourage everybody to go. And even if you can't, don't play golf, you'll call into their clubhouse and have dinner. Some of them do fantastic Sunday lunches.
Good point.
That's
the sort of thing you're telling them to advertise as well, is it?
Yeah. I mean, I don't advertise their Sunday lunches and stuff like that. So I mostly do golf related stuff. Then if the PGA Pro and the Irish PGA Pro, they all have shops and, you know, they all sell their goods. So it's good to support your local business.
And those golf clubs you're talking about that you're helping are obviously reliant on the domestic visitors, aren't they, rather than the
mostly
Yorkers.
Yeah, we do get some American tourists. I mean, there's a guy came over there last year and he went to, you know, to Boris Golf Club, you know, random. You know, he just happened to call in there and it got fantastic views. So it is important, you know, that the smaller clubs are known about.
They love coming here, don't they? The golfers, the Americans. Yeah. I think we have most of the golf links in the world, don't we, because of it being an island.
Yeah,
and golf links being on the coastal, they don't have those opportunities in America.
Exactly. They play Parkland, so their vision is to play, this is it, it's links, it's Scotland, Ireland, you know, where all the links courses are. So, yeah, so we have to go with the domestic market or anybody, you know, a lot of guys from the UK come over, or we get a lot of German visitors, and now we're a lot from Asia coming in as well.
And look, if someone keels over in the golf course, you know, your inner nurse can race over.
Hopefully they'll have defibrillators on the golf course.
You've loads of messages coming in, actually, for you. Someone says they follow you on Instagram. Okay, so you have to do all that social media stuff. You should have your own TV show. You showcase all that's good about Irish golf, golf courses and so on. Bord Fáilte, please note. Well, yeah, Fáilte Ireland are the domestic ones. That's from Roisin Keogh. Maybe she's... if she's Mount Anvil.
Don't know her.
I'm only joking. It is sad how we perceive success. Family and friendships are far more wholesome and fulfilling than money. We need to change the narrative, says Aoife. I mean, I think you were fortunate to be in a close family. You're all close together, I believe.
Yeah, we're very close. So we have a WhatsApp group together, so the four of us, and we... Yeah, we put up that. I didn't even tell. I think I told my sister this morning. I didn't tell the boys. I actually forgot. So they'll probably kill me.
Be careful, the spyware, you know, here there's a Smurfit family WhatsApp group. That could be a target.
Yeah.
Hi there. I worked for the Smurfits for over 20 years. Amazing employers and colleagues. Always grateful for the opportunities and happiness working at Smurfit. That's from Tricia from Cabra. Norma Smurf, this is for your mum again. Norma Smurf is a charity champion, a woman who worked hard, was so approachable and decent, says Carmel Doyle in Beaumont. Your mum became an Irish citizen only for the first time last year.
She did, I know. And she's still waiting for her passport.
Imagine
8 months, 9 months later. So she finally had to send in her other passport and she's waiting for her Irish passport to come back. So.
Much deserved.
Yeah.
This is another message. I'm often in Vincent's private for cancer treatment and often comment I can look down on the golfers in the Ellen Park course. I follow Sharon on Twitter. She said a virtual hi to me in the comments more than once. She seems like great crack. Says David. Good luck to you.
I do my best. I do get messages when I'm on the golf course to say wave at me.
I thought that was a breach of etiquette now on, if you're looking at your phone on that.
I know. Well, you know what? We're all very conscious of it, like in Elm Park, because, you know, we're very lucky to be playing that par three in front of the hospital. And a lot of the members do wave up and we do get a lot of waves.
And the wonderful space that you have
back
in that area.
Nursing, so, you say, back to my debate, nursing. Yeah.
We're out of election. We can't discuss elections.
No, definitely not.
And someone's asked, which you've already kind of mentioned, I think the Smurfit name would have opened a lot of doors, but it probably closed some as well. It's kind of,
yeah, I think for me, as a myself personally, I just really never used the name. I think because I lived abroad for so long, when I lived in London, I was independent. Nobody knew the name Smurfit. It could have been, you know, anything. Yeah. And so there was a sort of sense of freedom growing up for myself when I left Ireland. So I think it's really only since I've come in the last, since COVID, that I've actually started to embrace it and sort of say, you know what, you're not getting rid of it, so you might as well use it. And so if I can do some good with it, and you know, in the golf obviously world, and you know, let me try anyway, you know.
Well, you've done a good job of it.
Thanks a million
for coming in chat, because I'd say it's very rare that people are willing to talk, because families are very quiet and private. But you have to work, as
I know,
you say,
thank
and this
you.
Is part of it. I want to mention your website for any golf clubs out there who think we do need a bit of help with our membership.
And please just DM me or message me or email me. All my information is on my website.
It's online, and that's SharonSmurfit.com.
That's correct.
I think people know how to smell it. Spell it
spell
by now.
Spell it even.
Jeepers. Maybe yes. There is a chip on my shoulder as a smell. Sharon Smurfit, thanks so much.
You're very
good luck
well
to you.
Well.